You've been talking about for weeks and kind of calling these playoff games for the past few weeks here. It hasn't happened, obviously, the way that you would have wanted it to. So with six games left, what makes you think this team is capable of doing what you need to do to get in?
Yeah, I mean, you look at the talent there, and we're one hit away, you know, making one play, making one pitch. We're close, you know. We just haven't been able to get that last hit, like I said, to make that play when we need to, or to execute a pitch. So it could happen.
It's another edition of the Talking Mets podcast here on this Sunday, September the 21st, 2025. Of course, I'm your host, Mike Silva. You can check me out all the time at thetalkingmetspodcast.com. You can get me on X at TalkingMetsOG and on your favorite podcasting service, Apple, Spotify, pretty much whatever podcasting service you desire. If you want to interact with me, Mike Silva at TalkingMetsPodcast.com, no G, Mike Silva at TalkingMetsPodcast.com, and now you can get me on Substack, Instagram, wherever you want at the brand new TalkingMetsPodcast.com website. Check it out. And if you want to subscribe to some premium content, it'll be less than the price of a cup of coffee a month. You want to chat, interact with other Talking Mets fans, the link's all there, TalkingMetsPodcast.com. Welcome to another edition of the Talking Mets Podcast. I know this is not going to be one of those shows where we're having a ton of good times and there's not a lot of good to talk about, but I do want to kick it off with some good news. So if you're a fan of the Talking Mets podcast, I want you to stop right now while you're listening. Go to your mobile phone. If you're in front of a desk, go to your desktop, PC, laptop, whatever. Type in TalkingMetsPodcast.com. It will bring you to the new TalkingMetsPodcast.com website. Why do you want to go there? Well, there's a bunch of stuff there that you could probably find interesting. You'll see brand new episodes pop up there. Of course, if you're a subscriber in Apple, Spotify, wherever, you'll get it. I know some people get me on Sports Spider and what have you and whatnot. You can go to the Substack page over there. You could go to the Substack chat. There's some top picks if you want to go back, especially with some of the work our good friend contributor to the Talking Mets podcast, David Mills, does with the top prospect list. You could go to Mike's top picks over there. We'll have more. Soon we'll have a section with awards. As you know, we do Talking Mets, Mets Person of the Year. We've had a couple of winners over the last couple of years. Francisco Lindor is our latest winner. Billy Epler a couple of years ago. So it's a fun site. It's really just a clearinghouse right now. It's a chance to continue to have this show get out there, get known, grow. And I felt like I have all these things going on. So why not just, you know, go to the TalkingMetsPodcast.com website and you can get, you know, the Facebook page. There's still some work to do. The Twitter page, X, whatever, Instagram, it'll all be there. I got to do some work on that. But we're in a really, really good space right now with this. I hope you enjoyed. I hope you enjoyed the work that On Podium did, Gintaris over at On Podium. So some good news as we head here into the final show before the final week of the season. Say that 10 times fast. And, I mean, look, when we met last week and then we had Mets Therapy over on Twitter Spaces, which, by the way, we'll have another one at 8 o'clock tomorrow night on the day off. Worst case scenario is probably what we're staring at right now here on this Sunday, where the Mets are tied with the Reds. Now officially behind them for the postseason because of the tiebreaker. The Arizona Diamondbacks, who just a couple of days ago looked like they might be getting pushed back, look to be nipping at their heels. And, you know, they also have the tiebreaker on the Mets. So right now, the Mets have painted themselves into a corner that is probably the worst case scenario and the hardest scenario. Having six games on the road, a slumping Cubs team. Yes, I know they have nothing to play, but they're going home to Wrigley Field. They've lost. They got swept by the Reds this weekend, and then a plucky Miami team. So the worst case scenario, the Mets have painted themselves in a corner now. Really have to go on the road and have maybe their best road trip of the year. And, you know, I've always, and I've said this a lot, and I feel like this is going to be a tough show. I talked to you about it last week, how really since June, all these shows have been tough. Some of the toughest shows I've maybe ever done since becoming the Talking Mets podcast, because it's quite honestly Groundhog Day. I should start every show with Sonny and Cher here. And if you don't get that reference, look up Bill Murray Groundhog Day. I'm sorry. I mean, maybe I'm dating myself on that, but I was actually going to start, and I can't do it because I'll get a trademark, you know, especially in the world of AI, they'll trademark hit me now, and then I'll get shut down. I don't need that. Maybe some of you would be happy about that. Be like, thank God he's gone. But I don't want to do that. So we'll proverbially start it with Sonny and Cher, and then you'll hear Mendoza talking. And I mean, how many times have you heard the quotes coming in to the program from Carlos Mendoza? But what I've been comparing this to is, and it, you know, and I always do this. I do this all the time. So if you've heard it, I'm sorry. I'm sounding like, you know, the preacher here in your place of worship, maybe over and over with the same thing. But this is like an NBA game, and the favorite and the team that's playing at home, who should be winning, gets out to a really big lead. And then for whatever reason, starts to play sloppy. Some crazy things happen, maybe an injury, some bad luck, some bad calls. And then as the game tightens up, they tighten up and they're just not crisp. But you're throughout the game, you're like, they're going to win this game. They have everything going for them. They have the home field, the home court advantage. They have the better players. You know, they still have control of the game. And then inevitably what happens in games like this, and if you're a basketball fan, you get it, whether it's college or the pros, something crazy happens. Well, you miss a couple of free throws, and then the other team comes down and shoots a three. Now it gets really tight. Like, okay, no problem. You take the ball out. All of a sudden, you have an open layup. You miss an open layup. The other team comes down. Maybe they throw the ball away, but then you come back. You throw the ball away, and all of a sudden, there's an offensive foul, and the team goes down the other end. They bang a three. It's tied up. You call a timeout, and now it's a brand new ball game, and it's the final 2 minutes of the ball game. And in the NBA, I don't care if you're the best team in the league, the worst team in the league, the last 2 minutes of an NBA ball game, anybody's ball game. I don't care if you're on the road, home, you know, on Mars. And right now, the final six games of the season, it's anybody's ball game. It's Arizona's ball game. It's the Reds' ball game. It's the Mets' ball game. I mean, I know that Miami is getting giddy and they'd have to win out. I mean, how crazy would that be? They've been playing pretty good since June. And you know, the Mets right now are staring down the barrel of a disaster. And after all the good vibes of last year, OMG Grimace, after all the offseason of bringing in Soto and putting the gauntlet down and really doing everything that they didn't do post-2000 when they lost to the Yankees, you're seeing a familiar story that as Mets fans we've seen many, many times, which is disappointing teams that don't meet expectations or seemingly large leads get frittered away. Although I have to say, the Mets have played like a bottom five team in all of baseball now for almost half a season. And to me, that's not an anomaly or a collapse. There's a lot of bad in this team. And I've said it, Bill Parcells said it, you are what your record says you are. And I think the first feeling I had that maybe where we are, and it's been stunted a little bit between the trade deadline and a couple of spurts over the last, you know, 8 weeks. That series coming out of the All-Star break against the Reds was the first time, and I remember that show, and I remember getting a lot of criticism in that show, where, you know, I said, maybe this is just an in-the-muck team, and this doesn't feel like a playoff team. I said that. And I remember people saying, well, you're a real Debbie Downer. Because I'm usually balanced and positive. And I think it's going to be really hard to be balanced and positive. The only balanced and positive thing I could say right now is that the Mets are tied. And if they win out, and I still will stick by it, and that would require them winning 5 out of 6, which is going to be a tall task on the road because they haven't played like that all year on the road. And they hit 85 wins. They're probably going to be in the postseason, and they got a ticket probably with the Dodgers, who right now it's really hard to see the Mets going into LA and taking 2 out of 3 in a wild card series. But, you know, baseball is, and it's showing even in the American League with Cleveland and what's going on with Detroit and how the American League playoffs has, I mean, this is really, if you want to talk about the poster child of why multiple wild cards or multiple wild cards are good. Just look at the American League standings. Look at all the teams that here we are, the last week of the season, are technically in it. Now, do all those cities feel like it? I think the interesting part about the wild card, I'm going off on a tangent here, but because you have teams like San Francisco that were technically in it, and really out of Arizona, San Francisco, St. Louis, which has been on the peripheral, Miami, the only team that's really never punted or, you know, done a pseudo sell is Cincinnati, and that's the National League. The American League, all those teams that are in the race were in the race and were competing. Maybe Cleveland's been that team that's been, because of the suspensions and what happened there with the gambling situation, that might have been the surprise. But you have yourself what Rob Manfred and many years ago Bud Selig wanted, which is a wild, wild card race in two leagues, especially in the National League, where teams that probably have no business being there are in there because the wild card played down. Normally, you have to be in the 87 to 88 win range to even be considered in the wild card, even with three wild cards. But guess what? This year, the wild card race played down, and it's because the Mets playing down. And that should not be an indictment on the wild card. That's more an indictment on the Mets. So we're sitting here now, and I know, and I've seen the comments, and I'm going to do something a little bit different. And after the break, because I'm not going to sit here for 45 minutes and rant about the Mets. And I am not. I refuse. And maybe you want to do a little bit of it on Mets Therapy tomorrow at 8 o'clock on Twitter Spaces, X Spaces. Just the branding over there drives me bananas. That's fine. We can do that tomorrow on Therapy. I don't want to get into next year. We're not there yet. I know that the reality of next year, and at this time next week, us talking next year or doing a postmortem of 2025 is very real, but we're not there. And I refuse to do that until we're there. And I refuse to not try to enjoy the final six games of baseball. That we're not going to see any more baseball till the end of February. I mean, that's what we like is baseball. And I know you, there's a lot of you, you probably just, you want this thing to end. And trust me, there are times you want this thing to end. But remember, I'm a Mets fan like some of you that saw the Mets enter the final weekend of the season in 1999 down two games with three left to play. And I saw what that team did. And there's a big difference between this team and the 1999 Mets team. I get that. I've seen the Mets of 07 do what they do. Shoot, I saw the Toronto Blue Jays in 1987 fritter away the American League East against the Detroit Tigers. A lot can happen. And right now, the way that the sport is playing, it is such a streak tournament sport, more so than ever. Anything could happen. Now, probabilistically, as we look at this team, why, after nearly half a season, and really, even before that, some shoddy play, would they do the following? Why would the middle relief be any better? Why would the starting pitching be any more consistent? Why would the offense show consistency? Why would the offense hit in situational places? Why would the defense be any good? I mean, especially fundamentally, not just fundamentally making routine plays. I mean, these are all things that have done the Mets in. And if you want to know why the Mets are here, and I've been thinking about this a lot because, and I've been guilty of this. We've sat here now for a while, and it's whether it's been some weeks I'm ranting about the offense, or for the big chunk of the first half, ranting about Soto. Soto may be 40-40, depending on how many bases he could steal the last week. He might be a 40-40 guy. I mean, think about how crazy that is. And Pete Alonso, for all his slumping in July, still driving in well over 120 runs. Lindor, not the best defensive year he's had, but still shows tremendous range and makes more plays than most shortstops would make, and he's been hot as a pistol the last month. And look, maybe the problem is those three guys, a lot has been asked of them because of the declines we've seen in Nimmo. Because the kids, I mean, some of the worst stats on this team, if you go to Baseball Reference and you go to batting splits, some of the worst stats on this team are the players 25 and under. The kids who are expected to matriculate themselves into this team, not necessarily from the jump, but as some of the vets got hurt, a Jesse Winker, and some of the vets underperformed. And really, yes, Beatty's been better. Yes, Alvarez has come back since being demoted and has been better. And I know that Vientos has come on, and he had a big hit on Saturday night, Saturday late afternoon. And Mauricio's had a couple of moments, despite the fact that I really don't think he has down the mental approach of managing an at-bat, but some of the worst stats. The fielding has been atrocious. The starting pitching, I'll give you one number. And this is the same number that I was concerned about with the bullpen last year that actually it's been cleared up in the bullpen as the Mets are in the middle of the sport now. But other than the Anaheim Angels, the Mets have they're 29th out of 30 in walks per nine innings by the starting pitching. 29th out of 30. They walk 3.6 per nine innings. Walks kill. Walks kill. And look, I know you're frustrated because there's some wacky stuff that's gone on this year. How many Nacho Alvarez's or Nunez's or Joey Ortiz or Buck 85, the 650 OPS club players are going to beat you? And you know what? Going back to that basketball reference, exactly what you saw Young do with the Alvarez fly ball there in the ninth inning, that's what happens when a situation or an NBA game, you're supposed to blow a team out, but you let them hang around. You know what happens? Bad calls from the ref happened. You know what happens? A player gets hot. Remember, they're pro players. Young is a pro player. He's playing center field at Citi Field for a reason. He's there. I'm not. You're not. He's a pro player, so he can make those kind of plays. He can make those kind of plays. So, you know, it's not the first time we've seen a wild catch by a defensive player on the other side. You don't get yourself into those situations where these things matter. And the Mets have got themselves in the situation now where these things matter. And now they're kind of in the point where they got to go for the gas. And is the gas going to be there? I mean, truly, this is going to be, for a team that has not had their breakthrough and probably won't have the breakthrough this year, this is truly going to be, for me, and I think you should as well, a character situation in the sense where you're going to see who's a keeper and who maybe you have some questions about the next week. Really. Because win or lose, and I've said this, and I'm going to repeat myself again, there is some huge decisions that David Stearns has. Let me put aside all this stuff. I see the comments on X. I see the comments in the chat room. I see the comments on email sometimes. Although the people that email me tend to be a little more sane, for the most part. Cohen, if you don't like Cohen or you're saying I'm mad at Cohen, you clearly don't understand what the problem is. Cohen has put every bit of resources into this organization. Go listen to Ernie Dove and his latest farm report about how other organizations and minor leaguers and other organizations are jealous of Mets prospects of the resources they have. And you've seen very quickly with Tong and McClain and Sproat, three pitchers who, by the way, just 12 to 18 months ago were not anywhere near on any radar to be contributing right now. And if you didn't have McClain, and if you didn't have Sproat, and if you didn't have Tong, you're not even in a tie right now. You're probably under 500. So think about that. And that's because of Cohen's wallet. Soto's because of Cohen's wallet. Lindor's because of Cohen's wallet. Pete, I know they played hardball with him. It's because of Cohen's wallet. I understand you're pissed at Stearns. I'm sorry. Stearns, maybe I was a little concerned about some of the underlying metrics, but who the hell had on their bingo card that Ryan Helsley was going to spend the majority of his time in New York figuring out his mechanics and his pitch tipping? Mullins, you know what? That's a lottery play. Taylor wasn't hitting. You brought a guy in who maybe gets hot. It didn't work out. I'm a little surprised how bad defensively his instincts are. Maybe this thing ain't for him, this New York thing. Tyler Rogers, I know he gave up the home run, the inside the Parker. That was a freak thing. He's been great. Soto has been who he is against left-handers. And you're whining about the starting pitching they didn't get? You got starting pitching at the deadline. You know what their names are? McClain, Tong, and Sproat. Those are your starting pitching deadline additions. I'm telling you, unless you wanted to rip up the farm for Alcantara, who probably wasn't going to get dealt because they weren't going to get the deal they want, you got the best possible starting pitching scenario. You know why the Mets have lost and why they are where they are? Just look at some of the quick numbers. The walks by the starting pitchers, one. The defense, abominable. Not just errors and things you see in the box score, instinctual stuff. Lindor, thing might be called a hit. He's not, getting the ball in his glove and transferring it. Maybe instead of, and this is one thing that drives me crazy about Lindor. I see all the fancy gloves. Whatever, the designer glove is. How about you just have a glove in spring training, break it in and use it? Like right now, that and I don't know if that's the problem. I don't want to pick on him. But you know what, Lindor, all due respect, I don't care about the fancy classic glove. And I understand that in this day and age, they could get gloves probably broken in. It's not a big deal. You know, either it's I think a lot of it is him and his process of really trying to do two things at once where the body and the mind are not in sync. But that's been a big problem. I mean, I know Soto's not, you know, came here and he's done some bonehead things. But, you know, Pete with the throws, a lot of little things that really add up. Look at all, they're two games under 500. They've lost 25 one-run games. Last year, they were 28-16 in one-run games. The difference between last year and this year is not J.D. Martinez. Guys, he was washed by the end of the year. You know it, I know it. I wanted Jose Iglesias back. I really did. But look at his numbers in San Diego. You know, Jose Iglesias was a little over-indexed. He hit lefties last year in a big-time way. And he was great in the clubhouse, and we all love the OMG and the song and all that. And he'd be great for the clubhouse, but at some point, they wanted to see what they had in Acuña. And Acuña's a pretty good glove, and let's face it, if you want to just look at player and athleticism and what they bring to the table, Acuña's probably better than Iglesias. Now, the leadership of the locker room, that's a different thing. Okay, it's not about a McDonald's character. It's not about, you know, whatever else, the squirrel or whatever the hell else you guys want to talk about. That's all fun. It's not about a song, a pop song. It's not about that. It's about the fact that a lot of the little bounces didn't go their way. Some are because of their own doing. But I can promise you one thing, and I keep saying it, and people scoff at me. Walks kill. And walks killed them last year against the Dodgers. And walks killed them again this year. Now, the good news is, some of the kids coming up, the three I mentioned, they're not part of really the problem. Yeah, I know Tongas had some issues in that one start, and McLean sometimes can get a little off kilter with all the movement. But guess what? They're attacking hitters and they're throwing strikes. I know McLean didn't get the win yesterday. His defense let him down. But that guy's a stud. Knock on wood. You hear me knocking here on my studio in the background. He stays healthy. So I don't want to go here and hear about, you know, Cohen this and Stern that. And I don't want to see any of these guys anymore. You got to be more mature about it than that. There is going to be some hard decisions. The next six games are going to determine some people's futures here. Pete Alonso's a tough decision. If Edwin Diaz, I know he's been great, opts out, he's a tough decision. The minute Edwin Diaz's fastball goes away or he cannot execute because of age or arm troubles, he is a bad pitcher. A very expensive bad pitcher. Look at Tanner Scott in L.A., a guy I warned everybody, be careful about giving a big deal. You all whined about him. He's been atrocious out there in L.A. Now, there's a big difference in my point between Tanner Scott and Diaz. But Diaz saw that contract, too. His agent saw that contract, too. Sees the opt-out and like, ooh, you know, my guy's better than Tanner Scott. What can I get? Got to be careful. They've kind of dodged. I mean, a lot of the experts didn't even want Cohen to give him that first contract after the 2022 season. You know, what are they going to do with Clay Holmes? How are they going to, you know, the days of Kodai Senga and this rotation being built around Kodai Senga are over, Kodai, over. You don't like it? Opt out of your contract, negate your contract, talk to your agent, go back to Japan. I'm serious. That's over. You are now a mid to back end of the rotation. We'll see if you could actually be a top rotation pitcher. The kids are the focus next year. And then you got to look at what we talked about last week, and I'm not going to reiterate it. It's not for this show. Is some of the core players. Can you move? There was a lot of interest before McNeil. What about Nimmo's contract? I know that's a tough one to move. Would the Mets pick up some money and maybe look at saying, okay, do you go after a Kyle Schwarber? Do you go after Kyle Tucker? You know, do they go out and do they figure out, you know, who's a keeper? I think Alvarez is pretty safe. He's shown a lot between playing hurt and his offensive production, although he still does things that drive me crazy. Like, the you know, and maybe the thing like hitting the ball hard right at third base before a double play and extra innings yesterday, you know, could be the, you know, everybody wants to blame Eric Chavez and Jeremy Barnes. And I know you guys are all going to want to fire the coaching staff, which I think is just, you know, nobody of quality is going to come manage here. If they see a guy like Mendoza, well-respected, a guy that will probably get a job with another team, by the way, very quickly. I don't think this is Luis Rojas. Because I believe San Diego was close to hiring him. if I'm not mistaken. And you think an experienced manager is going to come here and say, sure, I'm going to come here like Buck Showalter did and be out after 2 years, or like Mendoza now. The minute things don't go their way, the fans get fired. As a matter of fact, because the fans want the coaching staff fired, if I'm David Stearns, I don't fire them. Because why should you tell me what to do? Now, I'm not saying the coaches won't be let go. I'm not saying they won't have new coaches. Maybe there's some coaches that the process isn't there. But the organization is teaching a philosophy that if Chavez and Barnes are not teaching, they're gone. If they were not teaching that philosophy, they're gone. So if you're mad at Chavez and Barnes, be mad at the organization. Listen to Ernie Dove on his Dove Report. They are teaching from the minor leagues on up. They want you to be aggressive in the count, attack the ball, hit it hard. It's about exit velo and attacking the ball. It's not money ball where you're working counts anymore. This is not the Sandy Alderson days. Now, is that part of it? The metrics, and I haven't, and I don't have access to all the metrics that these guys have. For the most part, the only metric that you can really point to that maybe it's a problem is exactly what you saw in the ninth inning yesterday. Nimmo up, running third, less than two outs. Now, he's usually the guy that takes the ball the other way. That was a tough lefty he was facing, so give him a little bit of a break. But, you know, even Alvarez in extra innings, instead of trying to mash the ball and try to rip the friggin' third baseman's glove off, try to just make contact, hit the ball hard somewhere where you could get the run in. Situational hitting. Maybe that's the only thing. Soto, believe it or not, when he tied the game with the single, good base running by Siri, who another thing drove me nuts this week, it was Siri in center field on Friday. You know, he muscled that ball in center field. He didn't try to drive it. He just tried to do just enough to get the base hit, to get the ball. A tough pitch, by the way. You know, it goes back to, you want to be mad at Stearns. Things didn't work out. I know. Montas didn't work out. Siri didn't work out. I get it. There's a lot of players on this team that work out. He knows that. You're focused on the wrong things. You're focused on the wrong things. A lot of little things did not go well this year. The margin between last year's Mets and this year's Mets has nothing to do with the OMG and the clubhouse chemistry and all this other nonsense. It has to really do with some starting pitching regression, severe regression, walks being the culprit. Senga is the poster child for starting pitching issues with this team. I'm sorry. The poster child. Very deceiving good numbers even when he was performing. Great stuff. Talked about this, wrote about this over Beyond the Mic. Substack, great stuff. But not always commanding his stuff. Not always going out there and attacking the zone. Not able to stay healthy. Part of being a big leaguer and being a good big leaguer is staying healthy. So now you've got six games left. Is there another trick up Stearns' sleeve, like with bringing up the kids? I mean, I've read some people call for Carson Bench or Jet Williams, DFA Cedric Mullins. I mean, you know, that's a bit of a Hail Mary. I mean, Tyrone Taylor's coming back. I think that the logical thing is to put Taylor in center field and you get your defense there. Cedric Mullins has not hit enough to justify the downgrade in glove in center field. I mean, center field has been a black hole all year. All year. And it ain't going to get any better now. Is Benj or Jet Williams going to bring something to the table? Maybe you get a spark there the last week. You know, maybe Jet Williams comes up and gives a spark. I mean, he's been hitting home runs down in AAA. Benj hit a bomb today in AAA. I mean, those guys are certainly going to be on the radar in the spring. Center field is going to be an interesting conversation because I think Bellinger being available is an interesting scenario. Imagine ripping another Yankee free agent away from them 2 years in a row. What does that mean for Benj or Jet Williams? You know, what does that mean, you know, in terms of salary and payroll, bringing back Alonso? So the next 6 days, at the very least, are not a waste. They're going to show you who's a keeper and who's not. And that includes guys like Tyler Rogers, Ryan Helsley, guys like that. You know, if Diaz opts out, I got to tell you, I'm more inclined to let him walk. Maybe put Holmes back as the closer. Maybe bring Helsley back or somebody else. I know he's dominant, but you got to think long term here. You know, and at this point, it's possible, you know, the option, and maybe Stearns is on board with this, that bringing back some of the same guys who may have gotten as far with this group as you can when that was last year. Maybe that's not a smart idea, but we'll see. But you don't do that because you're mad. Because you're mad today that you're in a situation as a fan where the last six games are nail biters. And I don't think this is acceptable at all where they're at. They shouldn't even be close to that. I mean, they're losing to teams like the Nats and the Pirates. And I know Florida's been hot and okay, but I could go to so many series they played poorly. It's not like they've, in the last month, they've gone to Detroit and won 2 out of 3. They beat San Diego this week 2 out of 3. They swept the Phillies at home. It's playing poorly in 2 series against the Nats. You know, blowing games earlier in the year against the Nats. You know, Nacho Alvarez of the Braves beat you, a dead-in-the-water Braves team. You had down 5 or 6-0. You were teeing off on their pitching. So, you know, you are what the record says you are. But the little things matter. And the little things haven't added up this year. And why is that? I don't know. That's for Stearns to figure it out. All I know is, it's very easy to see. The walks from the starting rotation, the development of the young players, the chemistry experiment bullpen, that's on Stearns. He's done that both of his years here. I think that hurt him worse this year because of the starting pitching, not giving any length. Clear. It killed them. They overused guys, and I think they counted on guys, and there were injuries, to be better than they were. And they've suffered a lot of injuries out of that. You know, look at some of the opening day roster, how many arms have gone down. We thought they were about to have the breakthrough. They didn't have the breakthrough. They can still do some version of it. Look, they can make it and sneak into the playoffs, beat the Dodgers, beat somebody in the division series, and be in the NLCS. That is not likely, but would it surprise you? The way the sport is being played? I mean, the Diamondbacks won 84 games and went to the World Series a couple of years ago. Nobody talks about that. It's probably the least talked about pennant-winning team maybe in my lifetime. Maybe outside of the 07 Colorado Rockies. There's another example. 07 Colorado Rockies, a dead-in-the-water team. What did they win, 20 out of 21 down the stretch? All of a sudden, they're in the World Series. So, you know, I'm not justifying saying that's going to happen. That's not what I'm saying. I'm just saying let's not discount the fact that as of today, the Mets are not eliminated. It's not like they have to win all, you know, like the Marlins. They have to win six straight. Very probabilistic, unprobabilistic option here. So, all right, let's take a quick break. When I come back, before we wrap up, I have some emails. I'm going to read some emails because I get emails from you guys. I'm going to read some of them and respond to them. Maybe something a little bit different. I'll try to keep your guys' names. I don't know if you guys want your names given out. So I don't like to give out first and last names. So I'll try to give out, you know, maybe just first names just to protect the innocent. All right, we'll take a quick break. We'll be back with more right after this. All right, we're back. So a couple of emails. I want to read some emails here. And some of them are from, let me see, are they from the, all right. So let me, some of these are from the same person a couple of times. There's some new, you know, all right, let me see what it is. Okay, Jason. So Jason has had a couple of comments to me the last couple of days. And Jason brings up a topic here, how the Mets, what are they, 0-67 now, trailing the ninth. No ninth inning comebacks, which they had a few of them last year. And obviously that makes sense compared to, you know, what I said, that there are a couple of games under 500 and one-run games. And he brings up the coaching staff has been misfiring all year. And I don't know, like, I really, the whole conversation about the hitting coaches, I'm so agnostic on it because I have a hard time believing the hitting coaches with the vets, Alonso, Soto, Lindor, Marte, McNeil, any of those guys have anything to do with their success or failure. All they are is a resource for those guys, just like an iPad is, just like a video is. Now, holding them accountable to the work ethic, that's their job, and I don't think that's that hard with that group of guys. So I'll put them aside. You want to blame them for Alvarez? Now, I've read some things and heard some things through Grapevine that Chavez and Alvarez are like oil and water. And that might have Chavez's job at that point. And I know that he criticized Alvarez a couple of years ago, And I agreed with him about how he was just swinging for the fences. I think he wanted him to be a more complete player. Sometimes, and this is in every sport, players are who they are. Alvarez is probably going to be a guy that for the whole his whole career will swing from his heels, will be an emotional hitter, probably will have periods where he lacks discipline. And if he could give you a 750 to 800 OPS from behind the plate with good defense and good framing up until the point where there's an ABS strike zone and it won't matter anymore, then I, you know, if the catcher, if the pitcher's like throwing to him and he calls a good game and they're comfortable, that's a good catcher. That's not Mike Piazza. That's not a Hall of Famer, a middle of the order hitter, but he's certainly a good hitter there in the back end. Now, if Chavez was messing around with his swing and tried to turn him into a different hitter, whether the Alvarez did that on his own, now that's up to Alvarez, man. I mean, did the organization force him to do that? I wouldn't force any player to do anything who's had some success. Now, as far as Beatty, Mauricio, who's hurt most of the last couple of years, Acuña, Vientos, Vientos has talked about where he was trying to, you know, basically live up to expectations. I think Gelbs had spoken about that a little bit, and he went back just looking for his pitch to hit rather than thinking too much out up there. And personally, like, as you hear these kind of conversations, you have to put that into consideration. Is that the player or the hitting coach? If Vientos is the kind of guy that's just going to be up there waiting for that fastball to crush and hit, that's fine. But guess what? Pitchers are going to know that, and good pitchers aren't going to give him any fastballs to hit. So then you got to question whether or not that's a player. And I think Vientos is a huge conversation, especially if you're serious about going after Kyle Schwarber, who's a risky contract. You bring in a DH like Schwarber, and you know you really don't have any use for Vientos at that point. Heck, I don't know what you're going to do with the DH spot, because you need to put Nimmo in there, you need to put Pete in there. You know, can you throw Schwarber in the outfield with some pitchers in the lineup? I know the Phillies throw him out there every once in a while. Maybe. I mean, that seems like it's, you know, a fish out of water out there. So I know I've been hearing so much, Jason, this I've heard about the coaches. Let's see when the season's over. If Stearns feels that Barnes, who's always out there with the iPad, and Chavez, who's trying to get these guys to just make contact. That's the word I heard. Chavez just thinks that all contact is good. And personally, I think with a runner on third and less than two outs, and it's the winning run, and you could walk it off, sometimes I think contact is good. Hitting a hard ground ball at 105 miles an hour to the third base before a double play is not a good contact. But, you know, again, I'm not there, you're not there. Just because the team doesn't hit, you want a scapegoat, easy to blame Chavez and Barnes. I'm not so sure. I'm not even blaming Hefner for the starting pitching. I think, and again, Hefner's a guy who have a job in 5 seconds from getting fired. Hefner is implementing a program, and that's what you have to do. Some guys, and this is what I heard, Frankie Montas came here excited about the Mets program, didn't put the work into it. Griffin Canning did. Griffin Canning saw results. Now, when you bring in guys and they're big leaguers, and they're making a lot of money, you kind of got to like get buy-in when you sign them or trade for them. Or if you trade for them, you got to make sure that they're coachable. If they come here and they do a bait and switch, like I've understood Montas did, then that's a different problem. Then, you know, you didn't read the character correctly. I thought Montas, again, with Montas, and that goes on Stearns, I went yuck when I saw that signing. And then I understood what he was trying to do. Griffin Canning was like, interesting, because there was some underlying metrics that made sense. I looked at him more as a bullpen, long arm out of the bullpen. Turned out to be a really good starter, and I would try to re-sign him this offseason, work with him on his ACL rehab in the first half, and see what you could get out of him in some capacity down the stretch next year. Maybe give him a two-year deal. Now, Jason likes to add on top of that, he called me a mush. Now, this is a thing that happens to me all the time, because he goes back to when I went on with Anthony Rivera. Now, I can't remember when I went on with Rivera. I think it was like during the All-Star break, or maybe right after I went on his show. And he, you know, we brought up the playoffs, and I think it might have been the day after I had that show when they lost 2 out of 3 to Cincinnati. And I said, I can't see them. Well, maybe it was after the deadline. It was probably after the deadline. I said, all right, now that they got all these players, they got this Super Bowl, but okay, they're not going to miss the playoffs. They feel confident and comfortable there. And they call me a mush. Like, I get it. They had a 98% chance of making the playoffs in middle June. And I have to warn everybody. you really get caught up in these Fangraph and Baseball Reference playoff odds. I got to tell you the truth, I don't always understand them. I really don't. I don't always agree with them. I really don't. I got to tell you. Now, I get it. If you're a 112 loss team like Colorado, I get them. But to go from 90% to 50% overnight, I don't get it. And that was the point that Steve made. He says there, you know, he said they were up, they had a 98.8% chance to make the playoffs on June 15th, six games up on the Reds just 2 weeks ago. Well, the real problem with this team, and I think it goes back to the starting pitching, which has been inconsistent, which I tie into the walks, is that they don't really stop losing streaks. Maybe that's part and parcel to not having a true stopper. If you remember, one of the reasons why they brought Mike Hampton in after the 1999 season was because they felt Al Leiter was better as like a 1A or a number 2, and they wanted to get an ace in here that would have been able to help them stop the bleeding rather than a lot of good number 3s like Rick Reed and Masato Yoshii, Bobby Jones, and so on and so forth. And, you know, it worked. Hampton was the NLCS MVP. So that is going to be a conversation this offseason. I mean, I'll give you a precursor. I know I said I wasn't going to talk about next year. But I think the Mets have to look at, are there young pitchers that are on bad teams that are going to become expensive? Similar to how Houston plucked Gerrit Cole away from Pittsburgh. And, you know, can, you know, what kind of prospect haul will you give? Will you go for a veteran like Sandy Alcantara? That will be part of it. Now, Sam, who contacts me quite a bit, wants to get rid of all the players, the coaches. You know, this is the worst franchise, the worst year this franchise has had, given the hype. I don't agree with that. This is not the worst year this franchise has had, given the hype. I think we were very wide-eyed pretty quickly into this season that this team wasn't perfect. I think the starting pitching was a question mark from the start, especially with the injuries. I understand that, and I was in the ballpark after Peterson threw that shutout, and then the Kodai Senga the following day when he got hurt. You would not have thought at that point as a Mets fan that you'd be in this situation. I've lived through the disappointment of 1992, the worst team money can buy. I saw the final disappointing seasons post-1988. When they fired Davey Johnson. I remember the 2002 team when they went out on a shopping spree. I also think, you know, you look at 09 and post 07, 08 misses and how that team fell apart. I think that was very disappointing. Actually, that was some of the most, the fact that you in the prime of Wright and Reyes, that could go down as maybe the most disappointing outcome. Here's the thing, Sam. This team might have a top five farm system in baseball. You have seen a little glimmer of these three young pitchers that have come up. There are more. We haven't even seen Carson Benge and Jet Williams, Nick Morabito, Jacob Reimer. There are Ilian Pena. There are some serious prospects on this team. Now, not all of them are going to be a part of 2026, and some of them may never see a Mets uniform. They may be solutions this winter to upgrade the roster. I mean, the Mets now have more options. They were able to make deadline deals, bring in, whether they worked out or not, useful pieces. And they really didn't dent their farm system in a big way. Yeah, you know, maybe one of the guys that they gave up for Helsley in St. Louis comes back to haunt them. Maybe Baez comes back to haunt them. But, you know, that happens. And I get it. Some people are angry about Orzy. And Mike Vasil's one that I'm not so sure. I mean, I don't think the peripherals are going to bear out, you know, what he did in Chicago, but okay. You know, I mean, Tyler Zuber didn't work out. I get it. Siri didn't work out. I wanted Harrison Bader back. I did hear. And by the way, after I knew this is the first time it's happened. I kid you not. As I said, Jose Siri, the iPhone went off. And I said, I thought it was going to happen a lot this year. It didn't. You know why? Because he never played. So him not playing saved me. I have my iPhone sitting here, and then I see Siri go off. And I'm like, why is Siri going off? Well, because of Jose Siri. I heard Harrison Bader, I don't know if he wanted to play here. You know? They also had to consider Soto. I mean, Soto, in the pursuit of Soto, which is a good thing, I think everybody would agree, may have locked up some other aspects of the team. I mean, I think we kind of all knew this. I do not agree that this is the worst year the franchise has had. I'm sorry, Sam. I don't know how old you are. Maybe you're older than me. With all respect, I don't agree with that. And, you know, our friend Ben Ryder, and Ben always sends me, and I'm sorry, Ben, I gave your last name, but I've given it before, so I usually just say Ben. You know, he's disappointed in Mendoza. He points out to not using Diaz for the second inning. He got him hot on Friday night. That was Diaz's explanation. You know, part of the problem I've had with this bullpen and that right now is that, and I think maybe that's some PTSD from Mendoza. And I thought about it on Friday. Here it was. It's 12-6 ball game. One out. Davinsky's on the mound. And they have some hitters, the Nats. You know, a bloop and a blast, that's a two-run ball game in an instant. It goes from 12-6 to 12-8, 12-9, 12-10 in an instant. And then Diaz might not be ready, and then you're rushing Diaz in. So I understand it. I think you're always going to play some chemistry experiment with the bullpen. I think that's part of every big league team now. Should the Mets go and use 46, 47 pitchers? No, that's absurd. That's what second division clubs use. But they've been a second division club since June, so maybe they are a second division club. Let's face it. They've done the reverse of what the 1995 Mets did. If you look at the 1995 Mets, they were awful the first half. They had one of the best records in baseball in the second half. And probably if they had it anywhere near a decent first half, they might have had a shot at a wild card that year. That was when they brought up Isringhausen and Pulsifer and, you know, all that stuff. This has been the opposite. So maybe they are a second division club at this point. But what I would like to see, and it will be interesting, and I'd be very curious who's going to be on the Arizona Fall League roster. The chemistry experiments I want to see is with their young arms, the Ryan Lamberts, the Dylan Rosses, guys like that. You know, for me to sit here and see Dick Lovelady and Chris Davinsky, who I actually don't think has been bad. I actually think it's unfair how veteran pitchers, and I'm sure they're going to address this in the next CBA. I know they can only shuttle these guys five times. This is like fantasy baseball now. You know, like in fantasy baseball where you just pick up and drop guys, especially the last couple of weeks of the season when you're trying to, if you're in a rotisserie league, not a head-to-head, where you're trying to win some categories. It's like add drop. Like, you could see that the game has evolved where GMs who played fantasy baseball 30 years ago and now are running teams are treating these teams like fantasy baseball teams, but these are human beings. See, I always feel the shuttling and the lack of having a home just is not a good thing. Look, you're going to have to probably bite the bullet and add to the roster a taxi squad of some sort of a couple of players that are available. And maybe you put some restrictions on who could be on the taxi squad so that you could then get these guys active in and out. Because pitching is not going to get better. And legislating pitching and how long a starter has to go, it's just stupid. That's Manfred going a road too far. So those are some of the comments. There were more. Oh, you know what? I'm going to do one more. Before I wrap up, let me do one more. Because I'm going to try to wrap up on a positive note. I'm going to try to give you a cool thing to get you going. Because I'm going to try to get you going on the way out with something. So just stay with me a minute. So Tim writes, and this is funny because I always say, you know, criticize Sandy Alderson. I wasn't the biggest Sandy Alderson guy. Tim writes, Sandy Alderson, is that you? Jesse Winker, Ryan Stanek, Frankie Montas, AJ Minter, Jose Siri, Ryan Helsley, Cedric Mullins, Gregory Soto, all additions that have blown up on the team's face just in this calendar year. I don't agree that all those have blown up. Not including players he didn't bring back, he should have, and guys he traded away they need like Vasil and Eric Worsley. That I mentioned that before. David isn't living up to his own contract, which is the highest contract for an executive in the game, if you believe the Post. Too many mistakes. He's blending in with the other mediocre GMs they have had. He's not standing out. Well, I don't know about that, Tim. Again, you want to say it's Cohen's money? Fine. But again, I really encourage you, go to Ernie Dove, our good friend Ernie Dove, who does the Mets Minor League Report, and read his last video. And I'm going to give credit because I knew about it, and I had it in my watch list. And then who told me I need to watch this? I got this from Steve. He says, you got to watch. No, who is this? much watched video. Yes, it was Steve. He sent this to me on Saturday afternoon. And then I watched it. I was hanging out in the backyard with my dogs on a nice, you know, one of those last days of summer. And I'm sitting there watching a 15-minute Ernie Dove video about the farm system and the process the Mets are using. That's really good. So, Tim, I get it. David Stern probably will say, hey, we made some mistakes. Out of all those names, Stanek, I can't, because he was brought in just to be an early innings guy, and he was good last year in the postseason. Soto hasn't been that bad. Mullins, I can't, I mean, Mullins and Helsley, those made sense at the time. Siri, I had some doubts. I knew, I loved the defense and the base running, but I heard he was kind of like a bit of a hot dog, and that bothered me. And that always, that seriousness of a player always brings the question. You bring him into this locker room, is he going to learn to be serious or is he going to regress? And he regressed. AJ Minter, that was a good move, but he got hurt. Like, what are you going to do? I mean, Brandon Woodruff just had a lat issue out for Milwaukee. I mean, what are you going to do? You're going to blame Arnold, the GM over there? Frankie Montas is probably the one that you can question. But remember, pitching is so expensive. And these kids weren't ready. Now the kids are ready. Now you've got three kids that you go to spring training with. Let's say you have Senga, a healthy Manaea. Maybe you bring back Griffin Canning. You have a couple of kids down in the minor leagues. You got Peterson. You've got some depth already set up. And you have to, I think the biggest decision is, are you going to trade some of your prospect depth to get a potential top of the rotation? Are you going to get the next, you know, a Joe Ryan, a George Kirby? Are you going to go after a stud like a Contra? Somebody else going to become available from a team that needs to shed payroll? I'm not even going to bring up Paul Skeens because I think that's ridiculous. I mean, that's such a haul the Pirates would require. I mean, the Mets could probably get, with their farm system, the way people are talking about it, and it would be, the Mets could probably get anybody they want. They could probably get Paul Skeens if they want. Now, do you want to blow up your farm system and all your depth for one player? I mean, Skeens is a guy that probably would be one of those guys. But I also be careful. You don't want to just start ripping from the farm system indiscriminately to just win next year. They've worked so hard to get here. This is the best I've felt about the Mets' depth and farm maybe ever. Maybe since the 80s. I have to be honest with you. I never felt great when Sandy Alderson was the GM because it was Manaea's drafts there towards the end that did most of it, and he traded for Syndergaard. One thing that Alderson did that kind of made it all, the whole farm system deal better, was he traded for Syndergaard, he traded for Darnell, he traded for Wheeler. He really maximized the value of Beltran and R.A. Dickey. I mean, incredibly did so. And in a period of time, mind you, where when you were on the last year of your contract, teams were squeezing you. Like, how he got Wheeler for Beltran, that was pure desperation for a San Francisco team that was looking to repeat and needed offense. Usually you don't get the number one prospect. And other names they were throwing around, the Gary Browns of the world, I can't remember who else. They were guys that were interesting. Mike Minor, I think the Braves were looking at throwing at him. The guy that wound up, Texas was maybe looking at the guy that wound up, Joey Gallo, the guy that wanted to play for the Yankees, that name was thrown around. You know, he made out. And look, unfortunately, Wheeler spent a good chunk of his career figuring himself out. And by the time he was just about to get good, they were, again, payroll restrictions with the Wilpons, health concerns. I think the Mets had every right to be concerned about the health. And, you know, they didn't have the ability at that point without Cohen's wallet to take a risk on a 5-year deal for a pitcher that could have easily, and you've seen, he's now got thoracic outlet syndrome. Eventually the arm was going to go. I told you guys that, but you sign up for that contract now because you got a good value. The Phillies got a good value. And who knows, the Mets, maybe they're in a different spot if they had Wheeler in 2022, last year. Who knows? So you'll see that. So interesting stuff from the group here. And again, I really got to say, we're building a really good community. I don't always jump in the chat room all the time, and I don't always respond very quickly to emails. I read everything, and I want to say I really appreciate you guys and how far we've come. I'm working on what's next. I think this website and having this kind of like clearinghouse where people could just go and see all the things that we have to offer here is a start. I'm thinking about, you know, the Twitter Spaces is kind of like a test. Can we do more live interaction and what that looks like throughout the winter? So keep in tune for that. And we're going to do Mets Therapy tomorrow, 8 o'clock. If you're an X user, go on X, follow at Talking Mets No G, and I'll be there. So, all right. Normally, I wrap up with, you know, my outro song, which is the old 80s Mets, Let's Go Mets from the 80s, because that's what I grew up on. When I would listen to WFAN and I would listen to the Mets on the way out, when post-game shows were done, the theme song that I play is an old school 80s theme song. And the one coming in is an ode to like the 70s Mets. And I get criticized because some people are like, well, why are you, you know, doing that? I mean, it's more of an ode to Mets history. So I usually get criticized for not being modern enough. I hear it all the time. Ah, why are you having these older players on and whatnot? Whatever. That's a different story. So anyway, I want to give a shout out to Tommy Byrne. Now, Tommy Byrne has a new Mets song, which is called Kings of Queens. And you can get it on Apple, you can get it on Spotify. Tommy Byrne and Ron Haney. I hope I've pronounced both of your names correctly. Thomas Patrick Burns, right? Is that Thomas Patrick Burns? Tommy Burns? He's the vocals. He's also the songwriter. And Ron Haney, who produced it. I want to play this song because Tommy gave me permission to play this song on the show. I'm going to play it in totality. And I want you guys to feel good because I know you feel like garbage. Look, this has been an awful, awful weekend. And I'll tell you what. Great, you know, the win on Friday was all right. It was kind of one of those slow pitch softball wins, but in this time of the year, you take it, right? Saturday in the ninth inning, after they tied the game with the big hit from Soto, and the series made up a little bit for Friday with the base running. And Lindor winds up stealing third. I'm like, all right, one out, they're going to steal this game. You know, the Reds, maybe they lose. They're going to get, you know, hold off the D-backs. They're going to hold off or maybe expand on San Francisco. They could maybe potentially go into the road trip up two or three games. And they're in a good place. And from that point in the ninth inning and the frustration of that game, which we've seen that game play out. We saw that game against Cleveland and some other teams, how they had so many chances to win at home in extra innings. We're now here. So there's nothing I could say that's going to make you feel better about the next six games in this week coming up. But we'll end it by listening to Kings of Queens from Tommy Byrne and Ron Haney on a way out. So I want to thank everybody for tuning in to this latest edition of the Talking Mets podcast. You can check me out all the time at thetalkingmetspodcast.com. You get me on X at Talking Mets No G and on your favorite podcasting service, Apple, Spotify, pretty much whatever podcasting service you desire. If you want to interact with me, Mike Silva at TalkingMetsPodcast.com. No G, Mike Silva at TalkingMetsPodcast.com. And if you want to get me on X or Instagram or the Substack premium content or the chat room, just go to the new TalkingMetsPodcast.com website. Hope to see you there. Till next time, remember tomorrow, Twitter Spaces at 8. All you users of X, till next time, till tomorrow at 8 o'clock. Take care, everybody. Now, let's wrap it up with Kings of Queens by Tommy Burns.
King of Queens, yeah, we are the best. Here we go.
Let's go, Mets.
Make no mistake, we run this town. Like a pop fly, we'll run you down. Now, now.
Let's go, Mets. You gotta believe to keep the fire blazing. Like
said the Mets are amazing. That I told